it takes a lot to get this weekend together, and I think it's been a spectacular, fun, just loving weekend. So thank you so, so much to all the alumni volunteers. Thank you. But most importantly, I want to thank all of you for coming back to DePauw and participating this weekend, and thank you for the journeys that you have made to come back to Greencastle. Now, it might not have occurred to you, but you're participating in history by coming back. Thomas Goodwin was a member of the first graduating class of this university, a class that included two eventual lawyers, two ministers, and a United States senator. And he was the first student to come to Indiana Asbury College from outside Putnam County. He entered college in November of 1837. He left his home in Brookville, Indiana on an early Wednesday morning. He began the journey to Greencastle in a stagecoach, but 2 weeks of rain in the state had made passage by coach impossible once they left the outskirts of this small town. So the first 17 miles out of Brookville were covered in a two-horse wagon. The passengers, there were three including Goodwin, hoped to make it to Indianapolis but by nightfall. But 6 miles out of Indianapolis city limits, the wagon broke down in the midst of a deep ravine. The driver unhitched the wagon and the passengers mounted the horses, though Goodwin walked alongside holding the trunk his mother and father had packed for him. The next day in Indianapolis, Goodwin managed to catch a stagecoach that was headed out of Indianapolis aiming for St. Louis, a route that would pass through Putnamville. By midnight, again because of the heavy rains, the coach had only traveled a few miles out of Indianapolis. And by daylight of the next morning, they had only made it as far as Plainfield. Eventually, the next day, now Friday, the band of travelers, including Thomas Goodwin, managed to make it to Stilesville. A day later, they managed to make it to Putnamville. Finally, very early in the morning on the next day, now Sunday, Thomas Goodwin made it to Lynch's Tavern on the east side of the square in Greencastle, the last few miles having been traveled by foot. The trip from home had taken over 5 days. Now, finally in Greencastle, Goodwin inquired of the tavern keeper where the university was. The tavern keeper said, "I don't know." Last summer, it was supposed to be in the district schoolhouse, but I think they might have moved it to the county seminary. I'm not sure you'll find much there, though. The tavern keeper was right on both accounts. The young college was actually holding forth in the county seminary buildings, eventually giving us the name of Seminary Street. He was also right that anyone looking at that time would not have found much there. It being Sunday morning, Thomas Goodwin went to his room and put on the one suit he owned, one that had been handmade and hand-spun by his mother. And he went off to the Methodist Church. There he heard a sermon from the Reverend James Thompson, a newly designated faculty member at the newly formed college. At the close of the service, Goodwin went up to the Reverend and told him who he was. According to Goodwin's later written account of that day, here is what happened next. "Hold, stop, brothers," cried out the minister. "Here, Brother Thornburg, Brother Cooper, Brother Hadley, Brother Dangerfield, here is Brother Tommy Goodwin. He's come to us all the way from Brookville to attend our institution." And then what followed was handshaking such that I had never been victim of before, and no student has since. I realized then I was the first manifestation of all their hopes. Tommy Goodwin had arrived, he entered college, and our story began. Dear alumni, you are Tommy Goodwin. You are the realization of this university's hopes. You are 174 years history of this university. You are the echoes of this school. Now, I have had a niece who has watched me for years as I've taken my particular journey that had brought me here, to this place. She watched me as I left my law practice, as I went back to school to get my PhD. One Christmas, she was at the table as I was describing for my brothers and sisters the courses I was taking in graduate school. She was trying to figure out what I, apparently a grown-up, was actually doing with my life. Katie, at that time 8 years old, finally turned to me at the Christmas table and said, "Uncle Brian, what grade are you in?" I turned back calmly and said, "27th. She was totally frightened. Recently, Katie and I were speaking about DePaul, and she turned to me again trying to figure out exactly what I was doing with my life, and she said, "Uncle Brian, what's your job?" Now, before I came to DePaul, I had, as I suspected some of you might have, an image of what life might be like as a college president. I had imagined, of course, that it would be a Tweedy sort of affair. Lots of days in the office wondering how the philosophy department was doing, followed by quick jaunts out to the playing fields to see how the boys were performing. The day interrupted by occasional phone calls from alumni seeking to spontaneously send you large checks for whatever you thought was needed. You'd head home at the day, read some history books to give you gravitas. You'd walk your dog, a dog who'd be named charmingly after some historical figure from the college. And then you start the day all over again. Now, there are moments like that. Other days, you're Thomas Goodwin stuck in the mud in Stilesville. One day, not long ago, in the week heading into a Monon game to be hosted by DePaul, I found myself walking from the School of Music back to my office. As I left the Green Performing Arts Building, I saw a very large, nearly 35 feet tall, inflatable yellow rubber duck in the middle of Bowman Park. I walked up to the duck and saw from a sign there that this was an art project from a student who was in the inflatable art sculpture class. That began the curricular review. How whimsical, I thought. How fun. What charming students. By the swimming pool on my journey back, I saw an inflatable blue squid. And by the library, I saw a large inflatable couch. Those kids, I smiled. Then I walked by Emerson and the old Carnegie Library building on the main green. There I saw two large inflatable breasts. 20 feet or so. Near this art, I saw a large sign that said, "Uncommon Success," the tagline used by this university for several years. I stood there. It was 3 days before we would welcome our friendly guests from Wabash and elsewhere for the big game. It was art, however, so I knew I would have a hard time just asking the facilities crews to remove these objects of art. Just then, Matt from Sigma Chi walked by. "What's wrong, Dr. Casey?" he asked. I gestured toward the inflatables. He said, "Oh, don't worry. I'm from Los Angeles. I've seen bigger." This is true. There are 1,000 moments that make up a day at a college. Moments of humor, moments of discovery, of conversation, and of planning. There are challenges, there are debates, there are sparks. These are the rhythms of semesters and years. You go from founding to 174 years, day by day and course by course, student by student. But there are deeper rhythms to a college. It's important to understand that colleges never stay still. It's easy to think that these old institutions, and this is one of the oldest in the country, stop history, Steeped in the past, they seem immune to the currents of time. But colleges and universities are always in motion. Importantly, they're always getting stronger or they're getting less strong. And it's easy to lose sight of this, to think that things will always be as they are. The great schools, though, know what makes them strong, and they burnish these things. They build on these strengths. It turns out that this country, indeed the world, needs the great schools, and it needs them to attend to their greatness. It needs them strong, energized, and focused on getting ever stronger. I am a big believer in energy, and I think that the great colleges and universities have a sense of energy about them, a sense of urgency, and a sense of pride. You are gathered here this morning on a campus at a particular moment in its history, a moment when energy and pride has a chance to come together with a knowledge of what has always made this place great. Colleges and universities, if they pay attention, if they listen to history, know when their particular strengths are the strengths that the world needs. This is DePauw's time. You are assembled today on the grounds of one of the finest liberal arts universities in the country, combined with a wonderful school of music. Over the next few years, you will see this university strengthen its curriculum, strengthen its faculty, improve its campus, create new ways to connect students to the world. We will be speaking to wider audiences with more energy and with more pride. We will be welcoming more speakers and artists and musicians from the world to our campus. We will welcome students of considerable achievement and promise, DePauw students, the types of connecting, engaged students who go and change the world. We will see the city of Greencastle improve. Within a few years, people who have never seen before will arrive on improved streets, past new welcoming gates, to a campus never more alive with ideas and energy. 3 years ago, when I was inaugurated to this wonderful position, I said that the world needs DePauw, and I believe that more firmly today than I did on that hopeful early day. There are few places that do what we do. There are simply no colleges of our kind that produce, in the numbers that we do, the type of leaders that have long been the mark of our alumni ranks. There are few colleges that can combine what we do here to produce the sort of graduates that the world needs. We're at a crossroads of history at this university. The school that attracted Thomas Goodman will echo with new histories. The next few years will see this old school more than ever take its place in the national conversation. This hidden gem will be hidden no more. It will take effort, it will take will, it will take resources, but it will happen. And in just a few weeks, as summer begins to turn to fall, we will welcome the class of 2015 to DePauw, 610 extremely talented students who will walk on this campus and on the paths that you did. They will laugh in the hallways you laughed in. They will see East College as night, as you did. And they will think on that day that 4 years last forever. And in some ways, they will be right. You are proof that 4 years last forever. But before that day comes next fall, when we welcome our newest class, if you will indulge me, I would like right now for you to participate in one of my favorite DePauw traditions. When you graduated, as was the case for decades, the then president of the university offered a charge to the graduating class. At our most recent commencement, just a few weeks ago, I read this same charge to the graduating class. As I read it, I was reminded again that it can guide any lucky graduate of this wonderful university. I want you to remember this charge when you leave Greencastle yet again after this weekend to go out in the world. You are DePauw, and you should remember what DePauw once asked of you and ask of you again as holders of DePauw degrees. So may I ask all graduates of DePauw University to please stand so I may once again charge you. Young men and women, you have entered into a noble inheritance. You are heirs of all that is past, prophets and sages, scholars and scientists, poets and public servants have wrought with patience and have sought truth, and the abundant fruit of their toil is now yours, is yours to use, is yours to increase and to bequeath to your successors. The university charges you to be strong, to acquit yourselves with integrity, and to be loyal to your highest ideals. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are in good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, always think of these things. Gets me every time. Dear alumni, I am so honored to be with you. I am privileged to be here. I will take care of your university, and I ask you to do it with me. Thank you so much for a wonderful weekend, and let's have a wonderful day together. Thank you.